Radio City Talk.
The A to Z of Merseyside football.
Okay, it's time for another history lesson with the fabulous John Keith. A to Z of Merseyside football. So we're on the letter H in the alphabet. We had an absolute legend in Hodgson last week. So where are we going this week? Morning to you, John.
Good morning, Steve. Well, we're going from a striker in Hodgson, you mentioned, to a defender, Laurie Hughes, who was a defensive stalwart for Liverpool for more than a decade, from the latter part of the Second World War through to 1957, winning a league title medal and playing in an FA Cup final. But his three England outings include the most embarrassing result in the nation's history. Hughes was born in Liverpool in 1924, the son of an Evertonian father. He played for Liverpool schools and was an amateur with Tranmere prior to Liverpool signing him professional in February 1943, having previously rejected him as being too slight for the physical demands of the centre-half role. Quote, "The day I told my father I was off to Liverpool, there was a bit of tension in our house," Hughes recalled with a smile, adding, "I think the £10 signing on fee helped. I didn't see a penny of it." Hughes made rapid progress at Anfield, his debut coming in an FA Cup tie against Chester in January 1946, and to prepare for the return of the Football League programme later that year. Hughes was a member of the Liverpool squad that sailed on the Queen Mary to the United States for a toning-up tour of matches and nourishment after the rationed years of war. It was an inspired decision by the club. The New York Times reported, quote, "Liverpool came to the States for a crack at our teams and our vitamins, and it was a clean sweep. The Britons swept to victory in all 10 of their matches and also swept their food platters clean." Away from the British austerity programme, they plunged zestfully into our steaks, eggs, milk and other victuals. Not only was there a perceptible gain in their strength on the playing field, but the squad averaged a gain in weight of £7 a man. The tonic effect of the tour would be evident in the months to follow, and when league football recommenced in August 1946, Hughes wore the number 5 jersey as one of several league debutants in a 1-0 win at Sheffield United. Little did he, or anyone else, know they were embarking on the longest season in English football history, which, due to a fierce winter, lasted to the following June, but one from which Liverpool would emerge as the first post-war champions. In the third game of the new season, Hughes was joined in the team by league debutants Billy Liddle and Bob Paisley, the great Liddle announcing his arrival with 2 goals in a thrilling 7-4 win over Chelsea at a sun-splashed Anfield. It continued to shine on Liverpool, whose firepower became even more menacing when they beat Everton to the £12,500 capture of Newcastle's free-scoring wartime centre-forward Albert Stubbins. And as the team negotiated the icy blast of winter, Hughes, never one to shirk a physical challenge on the floor or in the air, became a popular figure with the Anfield fans. He collected his league title medal after appearing in 30 of Liverpool's 42 games, later in the decade having to fend off a threat to his place from versatile Bill Jones, another fine player who also won England recognition. But after injury ruled Hughes out of the FA Cup semi-final win over Everton in 1950, he was back in for the Wembley clash with Arsenal, his return costing semi-final scorer Paisley his place. Although Hughes produced a typically solid performance, Arsenal won 2-0. The London club adopted him an effective policy of stopping the feared Liddle by fair means or foul. 2 months later, Hughes displaced clubmate Jones when he made his England debut in their first ever World Cup game and the first by a Liverpool player in the competition against Chile in Brazil's Maracanã Stadium, its vastness even more apparent with an attendance of less than 30,000. England had qualified for the finals via the home internationals, and Hughes helped England keep a clean sheet in a 2-0 win and kept his place for their next match, which was against the USA at Belo Horizonte. what transpired against so-called ragtag opponents was an ignominious 1-0 defeat for an England team that also included Alf Ramsey, Billy Wright, Tom Finney, Wilf Mannion and Stan Mortensen. It was such a stunning result that it was initially reported in some British newspapers as a 10-1 win for England, thanks to an incredulous telex operator who assumed 1-0 was a typing error and changed it.
Wow.
England's agony was complete when they and Hughes lost their third game 1-0 to Spain and headed home from their first World Cup experience with their tails between their legs. Quote, the defeat to the USA was a catastrophe for England. You can't dress it up any other way, Hughes reflected. I think we paid the price for the lack of playing matches abroad. The pitch was like a cabbage patch and despite hitting the woodwork a few times, we never really got going. At least I got something out of it because I was voted our best player in Brazil. But shortly after that, I injured my cartilage playing for England in a charity match and never played for them again. Hughes later captained Liverpool and continued to play for them through the club's steady decline, then relegation, in 1954, his final appearance coming in a 5-1 thrashing at Charlton in September 1957, when he was succeeded at centre-half by Dick White. Hughes stayed at Anfield helping nurture youngsters in the reserves until retiring in May 1960 after making 326 appearances. He ran a newsagent's, a fish and chip business and several betting shops before his death in September 2011, aged 87. Now, one of Southport's most popular players in the late 1940s and 50s was wing-half Bob Hacking. Born in Blackburn in March 1918, he cut his football teeth at his local technical school and played for Lancashire and Blackburn Rovers as an amateur, signing at Ewood Park in 1942. He moved to Luton in 1946, turned pro the following year and made just a single league appearance for them before joining Brighton in the summer of 1947. After 17 league outings and 2 goals for them, he found his niche at Southport, arriving at Hague Avenue in August 1948, ostensibly as an inside forward. But he established himself as a committed wing half, and although the club finished next to bottom of Division 3 North in Hacking's first season, their FA Cup adventures took them to a third round clash at Derby County, then one of English football's most powerful clubs. Hacking and his colleagues went down 4-1 at the baseball ground after a creditable display, but the tie earned Southport the then substantial sum of £1,104, and they reached the third round again the following year, once more boosting the club's coffers by taking second tier Hull City to a replay. Hacking went on to make 181 league outings, scoring 6 goals, playing on until February 1954 when he joined non-league Lancaster City before retiring and moving into market gardening.
Brilliant. Two amazing characters. Thank you very much indeed, John.
Thank you, Steve.
If you're interested in a little bit more of nostalgia history revolving around Liverpool Football Club, John's brilliant. I don't want to call it a play. What would you call it about Bob Paisley?
I think it's a tribute event.
Tribute, yeah.
from people who knew him, including myself, of course. But I mean, 4 great players: Ian Callaghan, Jimmy Case, Alan Kennedy, and Phil Neal, with wonderful memories of Bob and the effect on their careers, and just how he managed to achieve what he did: 19 trophies in 9 seasons. When you say that, it's barely believable that this man could do that, especially when he didn't want the job, and people said when Bill Shankly retired, that was it. They'd never replace Bill Shankly. Bob even said to them when he took his first team talk, I'm only here till he get a proper manager.
Bless him. When is it? New Brighton?
Floral Pavilion, Thursday, 31st of January, Steve.
Well worth seeing. Some brilliant stories there and some great legends involved in the night as well, including John Keith. We'll be back next week with the A to Z of Merseyside Football.
Thank you, Steve.
Radio City Talk. The A to Z of Merseyside Football.